Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
The Fed's new regime, and is AI the biggest inflation risk? Great to have you here. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here as always. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Yeah, this is a really good point. Does it cause inflation is a conversation we can have. But ironically, the inflation report that we just did get was actually a negative 0.2 the last time I read that. And so it is actually headed in the right direction. And so that could open it up to Joe's other point, which is that the Federal Reserve's new regime, the job might get easier if both of these come together.
That would be really nice, right? So the Federal Reserve, they released their monetary policy report this past week, which is a very large document. They always do this twice a year because Chair Warsh now is going to have to testify before the Senate Banking Committee and then also the House Financial Services Committee. And they get to drill them on these questions about AI and inflation. And what we're really hearing from the Fed is that they think that maybe there could be a little bit of inflationary pressure from AI initially, but more deflationary pressure over the long term. So it's about that sort of short-term pain, possibly for the longer-term gain.
And the reason why we talk about this, folks, is because if interest rates go down, that could be a catalyst for prices in the securities market and real estate to accelerate. And so it is a big deal. I know we talk a lot about the Fed, but there's a reason why we do that, because interest rates are so determinant of asset prices, both real estate, fixed income, and securities. And so that is the reason why we think it's an important piece. You know, the other thing I do want to talk about is earnings season is about to kick off. And last earnings season was one of the best that we've had in a significant amount of time, many, many years. And this earnings season is looking pretty good, maybe as good as last quarter.
Yeah, we've already had a couple companies begin to report officially, and maybe it's more unofficially. People think that when the big banks start, that's when you kick off earnings season, because then you're getting a couple dozen a day oftentimes with reports. We've already heard from PepsiCo. We've already heard from like Levi's. We've already heard from Delta about what their results were for this past quarter. But generally, according to FactSet, that we could see another quarter of more than 20% growth year over year in earnings, which you don't see those types of earnings growth unless you're coming out of like a deep recession.
Right.
It is impressive. Most of that is going to be concentrated in those big tech companies that are continuing to post really strong growth. But earlier last week, we heard from a Korean company, Samsung. A lot of us probably have some of their appliances around, right? But they are also huge in the memory chip market. Now, they reported that their earnings were more than 19 times what they were a year ago, but the stock fell on that news because apparently people are like, oh, they were expecting 20 times that's or something crazy. Even higher than that.
Right. And so that's the one of the reasons why when you look at those earnings, it's really a good point. Is are they concentrated, that big earnings growth that we talk about, are they concentrated in those top 25 companies? And that's a very valuable point. And that's the reason why you want to make sure you're in the right securities if you're an individual equity picker. The thing that we should really know is that these earnings estimates, you know, they're analysts, right? Yeah. They talk to the companies and they go, what do you think you're going to earn? You know, how many widgets are you going to sell? You know, are you going to sell And is it going to be $2 a share or $2.02 a share? And that's exactly what you're saying, is if they come in at $1.99, they get punished, but they come in at $2.10 in this example, and the stock goes.
Yeah, it can be kind of confusing why it's like, well, they only beat by a penny, and why did the stock price react so positively? Or they only missed by a penny. Well, what matters is the expectations. And then also, it allows you to almost figure out where you are. I kind of view it as almost like having a GPS system. It's really important to know where you're going, but also where are you? And so with earnings season, it allows us to get an update on both about where are they, where have they been? So is it you're, you know, a couple miles off from where you thought you were?
When was the last time you pulled off the gas station and asked for directions?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's been
Let me think about that. It would be a never.
Never.
They used to have that big map in there, too.
Yeah, map, right.
You know, the guy would come out from behind the counter and he would point out the map.
Rand McNally.
Rand McNally.
So let's focus on what should be really good. And of course, we talked a lot about tech, and there's been some IPOs and Micron and all these companies, you know, we're looking at. But of course, there's also energy is going to have good earnings as well because of the straits, I guess, partially opening up.
That's right. It's one of the ways in which my brother, when he bought his first muscle car many years ago, he sold it eventually because they're expensive to insure, but he also bought shares in Exxon because he figured that when there was the pain at the pump, he could actually maybe have better stock price performance.
That's funny.
Right?
And,
but that's kind of what has been happening. We don't know exactly what's going to play out with the U.S.-Israel-Iran situation, but we do know that gasoline prices today are lower than what they were back in March. So that's a good thing. But a lot of the energy companies, they were able to kind of rake it in during that quarter, and energy prices are still elevated. So it is really interesting, the earnings growth that we have seen. Also, the investment that they have been making, we know that it's a much more friendly administration in terms of the ability to extract oil and gas. The United States being a net exporter of oil, it's probably the reason why the economic effects of the energy price increase wasn't nearly as bad as what a lot of the Cassandras and the Debbie Downers out there would have thought.
And of course, Pollyanna.
That's right. Right? Yeah.
So, and we're none of those, right?
Yeah.
Because the things that folks, you have to remember, this is not going to be a straight line up. Even with earnings accelerating the way we're seeing them, there is challenges in front of us. And you highlighted at least one of them, a geopolitical risk. And it's not just in the Straits of Hormuz. They're still fighting, of course, within Russia and Ukraine. Cuba could be a small flare-up here coming up soon. So all of these are in front of us that could disrupt the trajectory. But overall, when you have a bigger aperture on your camera and say, what is it going to look like not 3 months from now, but a year from now? That's the way we build portfolios. And that's the same way you should go through your portfolio and know what you own, why you own it, and how much you're paying for it. And folks, we do that every single week across all of our offices, help you through that, make sure that you're on track.
And if you aren't where you thought you would be with your portfolio and are wondering if there's something you're missing, Annex follows the market trends on a daily basis. It can help guide you through the numbers with an experienced team that is all in-house so you can make informed decisions and have a clear plan. No pressure. We listen first and then work with you towards the lifestyle that you want. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Well, you've probably seen or heard about it or talked to somebody about it. The Trump accounts are here. They are available. And there are important dates and regulations and things you need to know since this is a brand new thing, but an important thing to know about, especially to get kids on some saving habits early on. And that's basically what they're designed to do. Somebody who's been following this very closely here at Annex Wealth Management, along with her team, financial planning specialist Rebecca Posig, back on the show. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi, Joe.
So let's talk about what you need to know and different dates and birth dates that you need to have.
Yeah, so these accounts were signed into law last year, and now they're finally available. You can finally open one up and fund one. And it's great news, especially for those who have a baby between January 1st, 2025, and December 31st, 2028. And that's because if you have an account open, you might be eligible for some seed money. And this is $1,000 from the government that goes into the account. You don't have to fund it. You don't have to do anything. It's just there for you to invest and grow for the benefit of your child.
Yeah, and it's free money. And so if somebody's thinking, well, hey, I'm about to have a baby or maybe a grandchild is on the way, how do they get the Trump account going?
They can go to trumpaccounts.gov or fill out Form 4547. That website kind of lists out all the things you need to do to get that up and running. And I do want to note that if you have a child that's under 18, you're still eligible to open an account. So if you've got a young child, as long as they're a U.S. citizen with a social security number, you're eligible to open an account for them. You just won't get the seed money. You'd have to fund it yourself.
You know, as far as the contributions are concerned, when you do get one of these Trump accounts going, it can be a little bit complicated.
Yeah, the contributions can be complex because there's a lot of layers to it. There's family member contributions, employer contributions, and both of those share the same contribution limit of $5,000. So if your employer is going to start offering this as an employee benefit, which we might see, that would be kind of interesting to see where employers take this. Mm-hmm. But if you've got the employer contributing, if you've got Aunt Susie contributing $5,000, Uncle Tim contributing $5,000, that's going to lead to some excess contribution. So just important to be aware that the $5,000 limit follows the child. It's not per person contributing. There's a lot of layers there, so it's just something to be aware of.
There are charities involved as well, individuals, companies that are contributing to these accounts as well.
Yeah, it's something that's specifically allowed in the law. These charities or foundations can select a particular zip code or median household income and set an amount aside, pledge an amount they want to contribute. So Michael Dell, I think he was the first one who jumped on board with the Dell Foundation, and he's pledged to donate to children under the age of 10 if they're in a certain geographic area and with certain household income requirements. Another one is Ray Dalio, the hedge fund manager, who's pledged to contribute to certain children in Connecticut. So that's another thing. It could just be a miscellaneous geographic area. And I think the most interesting one is Nicki Minaj is going to try to contribute to children of her fans. Not entirely sure how she's going to do that one, but she said she's going to try.
So these accounts, not necessarily for education, but they are for retirement. That's the distinction as far as the purpose goes.
Yeah, they're not for education. They're for retirement. And that's one distinction between 529 plans. Those are kind of the accounts we think for education because distributions can be tax-free if they're used for those qualified education expenses. That's not the case with Trump accounts. They act much more like an IRA. So with Trump accounts, there's this growth period where you can contribute to the account up until the kid is 18 years old. From there, it becomes their own account and it acts like an IRA after that. So it's subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty for those under 59 and a half. There are exceptions for some education expenses and first-time homebuyer exception, but ultimately it acts like an IRA. It'll be taxed like an IRA. So it's very different from the 529 plan and particularly education savings.
And let's talk about the contributions. We know why we should open one, but why should somebody contribute?
Yeah, these accounts are a great way to help get your child invested earlier, help them get on track for retirement earlier, and help them to be more engaged with their own financial plan or finances and investing in general. If you have a little excess cash flow, if you're already meeting your own retirement goals and you've got a plan for education funding, it could be a great place to just save those additional dollars and really get your child set up for success. And I'm kind of optimistic about these accounts because the government has made 529 plans more and more favorable and flexible over time. And these accounts, the Trump accounts, could be really powerful if they end up doing the same.
Yeah, and know that we're following it very closely, especially on your team. She is Rebecca Posig, Financial Planning Specialist at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for breaking that down for us, because I know that's a very popular thing and a lot of people are talking about it. Appreciate you being on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, more in-person events coming up. Couples in Retirement later this month, along with webinars on inflation trends and the Fed and the markets. Just click events at the top of the page at annexwealth.com and reserve your spot or set a reminder. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. You know, there was a lot of talk about IPOs earlier in the year, and there were some famous ones, but the one that really probably wasn't making the radar was SK Hynix, and that actually came out on Friday, and it was a big IPO, and in fact, as you mentioned before the show, it's not really a household name.
That's right, it's not, and that's probably why it didn't get as much attention. Plus, it's a Korean company. So they
South Korean company.
That's right, a South Korean company, and so they were they are listed in South Korea, but now what they have done is to raise more money, they decided to list some shares in the United States, and that's called through American Depository Receipts. It's a mouthful.
ADR.
ADRs. Yeah. And these are things that we oftentimes look at as far as, you know, some global companies, foreign companies, where you can still invest in them in the U.S. without having to worry about having an account over there to trade those particular stocks. So this company, they were able to raise, looks like, more than $20 billion, which is a decent amount of money, especially through these ADRs. SpaceX was probably the biggest IPO that most people have heard of lately. And this is basically on par with some of the other ones in terms of the amount of money that they're able to raise.
And it's huge. And then you talk about valuation and people are going, their minds are spinning. And Micron got a lot of attention as well because of the multiple of earnings that it trades upon. This, frankly, is even better valued.
Well, that's the fascinating thing, is that these memory chip makers, and that's what SK Hynix, Micron, and then Samsung, they're kind of the three big players in the, what's called that high bandwidth memory area. A lot of people kind of were ignoring them because they're so focused on NVIDIA and the chip manufacturers, not remembering that there are other things that are essential for these large language models. And now there's a lot of scarcity. It used to be that there was very cyclical. So the demand for memory was really tied to, when do you want to upgrade your phone? When do you want to upgrade your computer? And now it's almost moved from going with the cyclical valuation to more of a structural demand valuation. And it's hard to enter that market. Like, if you wanted to just set up a factory to start manufacturing this, you can't do it overnight, right? So it's pretty fascinating as far as how these are now being valued in the market.
Yeah, exactly right. And Joe, of course, this is just one of the things that we do when we look at portfolios. Where are the opportunities? And there's ways to put that into your portfolio.
Couples in Retirement at our Brookfield headquarters is coming up July 23rd, 6 to 7:30. So retirement, a major transition beyond just the finances. Explore lifestyle, healthcare, and shared goals. So again, that's July 23rd. Reserve your spot. Space is limited at annexwealth.com. Click events. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Our Women in Wealth page is up at annexwealth.com, including the new Women in Wealth podcast on demand with special guests and strategies to empower women and gain greater confidence. This week's episode actually includes travel destinations in retirement, and this travel expert is talking about her favorite travel destination, and let's just say she's been a lot of places. So it's kind of interesting to find out where that is. Also, Amy Blaine is going to be on with our Women at the Helm segment on who to be in the world of business. Click the Women in Wealth page at annexwealth.com. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and I know that you wanted to cover the macro support from a sprint to a jog. That was one of your headlines. We're looking at the Goldilocks labor data.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, we got the labor market report for the month of June, and it was a big downshift from the rapid pace of job creation that we had for the preceding 3 months. So just kind of to step back a little bit, in January, we had very decent job gains. February, if you recall, it was incredibly cold.
Well, we hit some big numbers after that.
We did.
Because but then all of a sudden, it was a sharp drop-off.
It was a sharp drop-off from more than like 100,000 down to 57,000. And people are like, whoa, did we pump the brakes a little too fast? But that's actually a much more sustainable pace of job creation, which we would expect to see with an economy that is growing, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. Some of their estimates are anywhere from like 1 to 2% real growth. So it's inflation adjusted. And when you have that type of growth, 57,000, you can still have the unemployment rate, which is what the Federal Reserve really looks at, staying pretty stable. It dropped from 4.3% to 4.2%. But we could actually see a slight reacceleration now of job creation, because this past week we did get the Institute of Supply Management, their services index, and their manufacturing index. So what they do is they go out and they ask a bunch of people who work at businesses who are responsible for making the purchases. These are called purchasing managers, right? So they're purchasing the supplies and all that, you know, really important job. And they also have their finger on the pulse of business. Now, what we've seen is actually an improvement where over the last 2 years, services has been in expansion territory. Now, the most recent report says that expansion is likely to continue because new orders are picking up, that sort of thing. Now, manufacturing, we know if we look back at that same 2 year window period, that first 18 months, they were in contraction territory on average, right? So they were not getting the love. But they've had about 6 months of a row of an improvement of activity, and it looks like also they could be expanding employment. So under the surface, you know, when we think about the gross domestic product, these big macro numbers, if we break it into services, manufacturing, and then each one of those, you can break it into different sub-industries, it looks like there's a little bit broader base strength that's percolating underneath the surface there.
Well, and some people really have to be patient in these industries. You're talking about 18 months and you're kind of waiting for something to happen.
Oh, I know. Could you imagine that, being a business owner, and you might not be giving yourself a paycheck for 18 months if you're not turning a profit, if you're in contraction, but you still have the obligations to your employees. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why entrepreneurs, business owners, they absorb a lot of risk. They are risk takers. And as a result, you know, you hope that they get the rewards as well, just like in investing. If you want to get higher rewards, you oftentimes have to expose yourself to some of these risks, the ups and downs, the vagaries of the markets and the vagaries of the economy.
And I know one of the things that you wanted to talk about was the FOMC. Minutes, data on arrival. The minutes were released this week, but predate the latest jobs numbers.
It did, yeah. So it was dated on arrival, not dead on arrival. So, you know, which is really important because...
Still DOA.
That's right. It's still DOA because they had their meeting before that jobs report came out. It was also before we saw the move lower with oil prices. We'll have to see if that sticks, because if the biggest source of inflation right now is mostly with energy prices, as that pressure begins to fade, maybe the pressure on them to talk hawkishly and the fight against inflation is also going to fade.
Hearing all this information, having someone ready to answer your questions can make all the difference, especially with a whole in-house team, so you don't have to go anywhere else. Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Well, a new Wall Street Journal analysis shows that fewer retirees and workers feel secure about having enough saved, even after years of market growth. So the big question becomes, is this a short-term confidence problem or maybe a long-term reset in how Americans think about retirement, especially when it comes to planning? Good thing Director of Retirement Plan Services, Tom Parks, is here. Hey, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
Tom sees a lot of this, helps a lot of folks and companies, and inflation, we hear about that all the time. That's easing by the numbers. Why does retirement still feel farther away for so many different people? I know that kind of depends on the situation, but for some, it really does.
Yes, it definitely depends on the person. You know, everyone's situation is a little different. You mentioned inflation. That's one thing where we look at, and Brian Jacobson and I do these inflation updates whenever the numbers come out. And inflation has cooled a lot since a few years ago when it was really high. But just because the number has gone down, prices are still going up. They're just not going up as fast as they used to. So the overall cost of living, I think, is contributing to this anxiety that people are having about having a secure retirement.
Well, and sometimes it's not about the numbers. It's about the emotion and being emotional, maybe reacting by overreacting. And so is the drop in confidence more about the math or more maybe about the psychology?
I think it's a combination of the two, because you and I looked at a bunch of different articles that kind of contributed into this conversation. There is a cohort of Americans who just have not saved much at all for retirement. And they're right to be concerned about how that's going to pan out for them in the long run. But then you have other people who have been saving, and they start looking at what's it going to cost. The other thing is you've got YouTube videos and all this other stuff where people talking about, you got to have $3 million to retire. Yeah. And it's like, okay, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a ton of noise out there. And then the math gets confusing. But then there is a group of people who's more concerned probably than they need to be, because they're listening to the wrong people freak them out. So my daughter just started working. She's 20 years old. She's a hairstylist. And I told her, it's an easy one for her. Start saving now. Don't worry about how much you're going to have or any of that stuff, and get into the habit of saving. We'll worry about the details later. Once you've been doing this for a while and you're, you know, kind of getting up there, been in your career for a while, now you got to start saying, okay, how much am I saving? Am I doing pre-tax or Roth? Where am I investing this money? Getting closer to retirement, then you really got to start looking at, okay, what do I have right now? You know, how is that going to grow? And what am I doing to contribute to it? The answers to all of them are different depending on kind of where you're at in the process.
And what kind of lifestyle do you want to lead? That first year, you're thinking you have all this money because you see it all right away, but you've got to be able to plan to live longer, because Americans are living longer for the most part. And traditional retirement rules, like we always hear about the 4% rule.
When you talk about things like the 4% rule and the way retirement really works out in real life, it doesn't look anything like the basic projections, because it's going to be a bigger number usually earlier in retirement, and then it kind of tapers off for a while. You get some of that stuff that you want to do out of your system, and then there aren't as many expenses. But then the expenses can go back up again later in retirement for health reasons and stuff like that. So when people think about the 4% rule or whatever it is, it's highly unlikely that your retirement is going to look the same from a distribution strategy perspective every year throughout retirement. There are going to be phases where it's more sometimes, less others. You just want to make sure that you have enough to weather the entire sequence of events, but then do kind of keep an eye on the sequence. And that's why we do planning with people, because the plan is a constantly evolving thing that it reacts and adapts to what happens in your life.
Yeah, you can't plan to a perfect scenario. Life happens, things happen. You want to change lifestyles, downsize, help kids with something. But when we talk about inflation obviously easing, we talked about that at the start of this, but how much damage does inflation do to retirement plans that really can't be fixed, because it's been a little tough over the past couple of years?
Sure. Well, and that's where you start looking at inflation of what, you know, how much of your budget is gas and how much of it is groceries, because everybody's spending patterns vary based on their lived experience. Fortunately, we see a lot of everything here at Annex, because we have a bunch of clients. Well, we saw this thing and we saw that, you know, we can help people kind of anticipate and walk through, because a lot of times I think people just don't know. They're like, well, I don't know what's going to happen.
Talk to somebody like some of my friends, maybe they're in their 40s, maybe they're in their 50s, maybe they're in their 30s. It's too late for me.
Oh, that's terrible. That is absolutely not true. That's no good. Hopelessness is never a good strategy, I would say. And if you are in your 30s and 40s, it's certainly not too late. Now, if you have that attitude and you don't change your behavior, well, then eventually that it's too late thing will end up becoming a reality. But it's definitely not the case in those ages. Oh, my gosh, I wish.
So if you are 5 or 10 years to retirement, you're thinking, OK, how do I need to plan for this? You're thinking about a fruity drink. You're thinking about being on the sandy beach, traveling, the kind of lifestyle you want to lead maybe in the first year or two. But 5 to 10 years from retirement, what's the single smartest thing maybe to make an adjustment to today?
Pay attention to what you're doing with your money. Pay attention to where your money is currently invested, and pay attention to what your budget looks like now. Think about it and then start envisioning what's it going to look like. How will this likely be different in the future? And I would say get together with a planner. It's very hard to do, and it's nice to have someone who's gone through this before with a bunch of other people. Don't have as much emotional investment in your finances as you do, and so you get someone who has kind of a clearer picture. But you got to start planning now and start paying attention. The closer you are to retirement, the more critical that becomes.
He's the Director of Retirement Plan Services, Tom Parks at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for being on the show, Tom.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, thank you for having us on today. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The show is also a podcast and is ready for you as soon as the show is over. A lot of people have been finding us that way, so thank you if you've downloaded it. Wherever you get your podcasts, another way to get our free education is with the Axiom. That is our newsletter at Annex with our week in review video from this show in your email on Sunday morning, along with what we're watching for the week ahead. Just search Annex Axiom. That is a really great way to stay up to date on the things that can really matter to your portfolio. Three other podcasts as well, like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America. And our SWOT podcast, that is Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing on Monday morning. And our new Women in Wealth podcast, featuring special guests helping to empower women through genuine conversations. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. You know, wealth management is really a full-scale offering between tax planning, estate planning, financial planning, and investment planning. And we do all of those with a deep group of talent that we have, Brian. But when you talk about tax planning, that is a whole year opportunity. It's not just when tax compliance is due, right, on April 15th. And we do that all year long. And right now, people are looking at their portfolios and saying, my portfolio is not up as much as the index, or maybe it is, or maybe I have individual securities that have done really, really well, or I have some losses.
Yeah.
And we go through each one of those securities and say, what can we do with that? And some of those concepts are tax loss harvesting, but there's another idea out there called direct indexing that we employ, and that might be new to some people.
It might be, and I think people are going to become more familiar with it. This past week, the Wall Street Journal had this really interesting article about how they think that maybe President Trump is even doing direct indexing, because there was this report that came out, you know, the president needs to disclose all these transactions that he does. And when they dug into it, comes to find out that it's most likely he's doing what's called direct indexing, which is fairly standard for us in terms of knowing about it, but it's a little bit more foreign to everybody else. So the idea is that if you want to generally match the performance of the market, let's say it's the S&P 500 or the Russell 3000, right? One of these indexes. If you can own the individual securities in there directly, so instead of through a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund, that's what's called direct indexing. So you directly hold the components of the index. Now that's really hard to do because there's a lot of them, right? 500 and, well, technically 504 in the S&P 500, because Alphabet and Berkshire Hathaway, they have different classes of stocks. So there's more than 500 shares.
That's going to win you a bet at the bar, right?
It would. That's
how many stocks are in the S&P 500, Joe?
You're going to be
your next raffle.
That's right.
I'm good at bar dice, but not that stuff.
It's trivia stuff like that I absolutely love. But instead of that, what you can do is have like basically a representative sample of the market, and then do tax loss harvesting. So the idea there is you can kind of track the market, and then if you're owning some shares, sometimes they go down, right? In any given month, any given year, you're probably going to see a significant number of shares that are underperforming the market, if not going negative. Well, let's make lemonade out of those lemons. And in that case, what you do is you can sell the ones that are at a loss, and then use that loss to offset some other things that are more concentrated, maybe work out of, if you feel like you have too much NVIDIA or Apple or whatever it is, you can use the losses to offset some of those gains to slowly work down some of that concentration.
And when you say you, I mean, we're not asking Mrs. Kuskovitz, you know, to do this. We do this. And and by the way, that article in the Wall Street Journal talking about Trump, his assets were held at Schwab, which is one of our main custodians. And so this is an idea that we would do for our clients, and we do for our clients as well as an opportunity. If you're listening to this, this is something that one of the things that we can do.
That's right. It requires technology because there are a lot of guardrails you need to put in place around this in terms of monitoring the positions, looking for the loss opportunities. And then also, if you're going to sell it at a loss, there are certain what are called wash sale rules. Mm-hmm. You can buy something that is different, right? You could sell Apple and buy Microsoft. But if you sell Apple in one account and you decide that, well, I'm going to just buy it in my IRA, well, guess what? That might invalidate that loss, creates what's called a wash sale. So it's not just about...
Joe, not washer sale at Best Buy.
That's right. It's not the white goods sale.
Oh, I get into trouble going into that store.
Exactly.
No,
wash sale. Yeah. Yes.
So those technical requirements about how long you have to be out of the position before you can get back in to be able to recognize the loss. So lots of complications, but that's what we do. And we love doing it. It requires specialized skills and technology. And those are services that we love to provide.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we do as well as making sure that your estate plan mm-hmm. is talking to your tax plan, and it all is part of your wealth management plan altogether. Let me just close by, there's probably a number of opportunities that people have out there, but working with a fee-only fiduciary is really key. And I a lot of times we say that on the show, and I'm not sure it resonates, mm-hmm. but there is a difference by someone who says, I am acting in the best interest of my client, or as a fee-only fiduciary. If you could explain that, you can put your Juris Doctor hand
That's
on
right.
to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah. What that means is that we, as a fiduciary, have that duty of loyalty to the client and a duty of care. And these are responsibilities that we take very seriously because, well, we legally have to, and also with from a professional integrity perspective, we certainly take it seriously. But that's very different than some other situations where it's like, it's in their best interest for now, for that transaction. But what about for the whole relationship, right? It's all about the ongoing relationship, about always being loyal to the client, and then also treating them with the utmost care that we can.
Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast is ready right now on the radio station website, or just search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Krause. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.